This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 396 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com and back from the wilds of Bangladesh. Mr. Glyn Lavender from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au. How are you?
Yes, I am good.
You are back.
No, I'm good. I was a little concerned.
About?
I spent the last 25 minutes looking for my microphone.
Oh, why, where'd it go?
After about 20 minutes of 25 minutes looking, I started to think that one of the listeners may have broken in to steal it. Enjoying the solitude of not having the podcast come up weekly.
Right.
They may have popped over because nothing else was missing, Bruce.
Right.
Nothing else was touched.
Right.
But the microphone was gone.
Right.
Then found in a very bizarre place. Do you know, why are things always in the last place you look?
Because you don't keep looking once you've found them.
Exactly. So it's a very bizarre place.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine it was in such a bizarre place because last time we recorded an episode, I think it was during the daytime.
Right.
Rather than nighttime, and I recorded in a different section of the house.
You were sitting on the loo, weren't you?
See, I thought the wife had got a new toilet roll holder. It turns out it was just the one where my loo roll. So anyway, so that disaster was, well, that disaster or you know, either finding it was a disaster or losing it was a disaster. One of them was averted.
Right.
And here we are. We are back. I'd like to say bigger, brighter and better than ever before, but you know, we shouldn't start a new episode off with complete lies.
No, that's correct. So tell us about Bangladesh.
So how are you, Bruce?
I'm good. I'm good.
Have you got a job?
No.
That's
right. So I went for that interview.
You did. That's
that
right.
Was like two, three weeks ago and have not heard boo, which kind of surprises me because I thought I was very high on their list of candidates that they were most likely to appoint. And I've not even heard a, no, we're not taking this any further kind of thing, so I don't know what's going on there. I had another interview yesterday, which I won't discuss who it's with just yet because, again, they haven't come back to me to say yay or nay, but that's a teaching position in audio at a very prestigious institution within Australia, somewhere that is known nationally.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting. And there's another job going. Once again, I won't talk about details because it's sort of still in the air, which I feel would be right up my alley. So waiting to hear, I think applications for that one close either today or tomorrow. So hopefully in the next week or so, you know, I'll get an invitation for an interview at least. So
Teaching one would be good.
Yeah, yeah. But in the meantime, I've been doing a heap of freelance work through my home studio. And
so not making any money then?
No, I actually am.
Oh,
no, I certainly am.
Oh, gosh, edit that out.
I'm not.
We don't say shit in our podcast.
Not replacing my.
We've never said shit before. That might be the first time in 396 episodes the word shit's been used.
I don't think it is.
So at least that's cleared up.
Yeah. Not replacing my income, yeah. But I've got a little trickle of money coming in, so
it's not end of the world.
No, yeah. But last
since
you left,
yeah,
I did a photo
things
shoot.
Up.
I did a photo shoot. Well, apart from that, I did a photo
you
shoot.
Usually things look up when I leave, but you did a photo shoot.
I did. Remember the cars and the grapevines?
Oh God, yeah, that's right. I saw one of them.
Okay. Fine, we can move on.
How'd it go, Bruce?
Well, I had a great time, and she had a great time, and she loved the images, and...
Oh, what was she, no?
Absolutely nothing, apparently.
He's in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
No, I saw one photo online.
Right. Okay.
And all I'm thinking of is cars and vineyards, but you couldn't see any vineyards in the shots.
Oh.
So I'm going, oh.
Really?
Yeah. Well, nothing that would be, that to the casual observer would go, oh, look, they're in a vineyard.
Oh, okay. I can't remember which. Oh,
yeah, that one.
That one. Yep. Okay.
I'm assuming if you're going. Oh.
Maybe. I'm trying to think. There was one image where the vines were very minimal in the image. But anyway, whatever. We had a good time.
Yeah.
I had a great time. Yeah, and so did she. And the guy who brought the car along, he was stoked, and he was great. He was a good guy. Worked at another winery in the Hunter Valley, and yeah, he was happy to come along.
Oh, so the guy with the car works in a winery too.
Yes. Yeah, funny, he actually worked for one of the competitors to the place where we shot. But the funny thing was, like, I mean, like any industry, so many people know other people, you know, and he's actually mates with the guy who runs the winery at which we shot. So, yeah, it was all very incestuous. But I've got another shoot coming up this Sunday.
Really? Of what?
I'm doing a mermaid-themed shoot.
Oh, that's original.
Yeah, I know, but I've never done it, so.
It's original for me.
That's right.
As the old saying goes, it might be the 5,000th time I've done this, yes, but it's the first time for them.
Yeah.
Exactly. So where are you doing it? In the desert?
That would be different.
You see, yeah,
fish out of water.
Oh, there we go. I'm just looking at the photos.
Of what?
Yeah, have of the vineyard shoot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the one I saw, I think all I could see was car, trees, and sky.
Right. Okay.
There was no hint of vineyard.
Right. Okay.
Having a really grape time. Oh, Bruce. Oh my God, man.
Hey, come on! You're the king of the dad jokes. Don't you start?
Really grape time. Bruce. So you're doing a shoot of what? A mermaid.
Mermaid themed shoot.
On a train line.
Yes, that's right.
He's really making something different.
Yeah, that's it.
Cool. So same model, different model?
Different model. Actually, interesting story. I should say the usual story.
Oh, yeah.
The model that I had lined up for the last 2 weeks that we've been in discussion, I reach out to her and the hair and makeup artist who put a hand up to come along and be part of this shoot as well yesterday and said, hey, guys, are we still good for Sunday?
Yeah.
And the model goes, I've just come back from this cruise and I'm all bruised up because it was a pole dancing cruise and I can't shoot. Whatever.
Pole
yeah, dancing? She does pole dancing, and her and five of her friends were doing, you know, exhibition shows of pole dancing on the cruise ship. It sounded like a pretty lame excuse to me, and I just thought,
well, she sounded lame after all that. Yeah,
I thought, I'm not even going to entertain this. I'm just moving on, you know.
Yeah.
Just so. The crazy thing was, I put a casting call up on Model Mayhem, crickets.
Yeah. Yeah.
Put a casting call up.
I've seen your work.
Yeah. Thank you, mate. Put a casting call up on two different Facebook groups, crickets. Typed into the search box of Facebook, mermaid. And, of course, up in the results, you've got tabs for people, posts, pages, and
fetishes.
Yeah, I've clicked on people, and the very first girl that was listed was in Sydney, and her and I had a mutual friend on Facebook.
That helped. That always helped.
And so I reached out.
You don't come across as a crazy stalker straight away.
Yeah, and so I reached out to this girl, and I said, hey, look, crazy story. This is what's happened. I see you have mermaid as part of your profile name. Are you a model? Do you want to shoot a mermaid shoot?
That would have been the first question I would have asked. First up, are you a mermaid? So, secondly, if you're not a mermaid, are you a model?
Would you like to be a mermaid? And I said to her, look, you know, I know this is a really, you know, left field request from a complete stranger. You know, let me know. And if I'm completely off base, my apologies, you know. And she came back and she said, hey, I'd love to do a shoot like that. It's like, woohoo! And, yeah, so, and of course, to add to the stress that I've been through today with regards to this shoot, the original model was supplying the mermaid outfit.
Oh, Oh, of course.
Yeah. And so I'm now without a mermaid outfit. So I jumped back onto Facebook and posted, you know, about what had happened and how I'd lined up a new model, but now I didn't have a mermaid costume. And a girl who has a photography studio in Sydney says to me, I've got two mermaid outfits. If you want to come and pick it up, you can have it. So, got myself a free mermaid outfit.
How funny is that, huh?
Yeah, so it was kind of like planets aligned eventually. So.
All comes together.
So, yeah. So, anyway. Oh, so, how have you been?
Yeah, I've been pretty good.
How was the trip?
The trip was exhausting.
Now, am I right in thinking that you stayed on for a few days after
I originally was going to.
Right.
But then when I was – my original plan was to stay on and photograph Holi.
Right.
But then whilst I was in India, my wife, as we know, fell and did her ankle in. So I figured I'd better not stay away any longer than necessary. Right. At an early stage of planning, when I was booking tickets and stuff, I didn't know what kind of state she would be in as far as healing and stuff, and I didn't want to be away any longer than necessary to
sure. Yeah.
So I end up not staying, which was good in the end because I was pretty wiped. It's a hard country to get around in. It's a very tiring country. I mean, in the main city of Dhaka, if you travel, sometimes to travel 4 kilometres takes 2 hours.
Oh, yoy.
By vehicle.
What, so were you walking?
Walking probably would have been a lot faster.
I was going to say, yeah.
So it was a pretty much exhausting time. Doing all that sort of stuff.
Was it hot and humid?
It wasn't humid. It was reasonably dry heat, and it wasn't particularly hot. It was 30s,
okay,
mid 30s, yep. It was pleasant. At no stage was it overly hot.
Okay,
I felt got a little bit of sunburn here and there, but it was just physically demanding, like a lot of these countries are, especially the less developed areas. It takes a long time to get anywhere.
Right.
For example, one day we had a 6-hour drive. To do 150K, we had a 6-hour drive.
I was going to say, was that 3 kilometres, was it?
The plan was, it was planned 150K,
yeah.
But about 100K into it, so about four or so hours into it, we came to a traffic jam because the bridge a little bit further ahead had collapsed over the road.
Yeah.
So the bridge had collapsed, and that's kind of the only road.
I was going to say, there's no other bridge within 1,000 kilometres.
That's the only road. So we ended up we're asking some people around. We found this very small road through villages that we drove along for probably for an hour or so at the start. And, I mean, really remote. We had only vehicle travelling along it, and it was pretty thin.
Yeah.
And stopping every now and then to ask locals, whose dialect seemed to even confuse our guides.
Oh, wow.
They had trouble understanding what was being said.
Wow.
And then we came around a bit of a bend, and there's standing in the middle of the streets 5 guys with the machine guns.
Oi, oi, oi.
Yeah, blocking the road and pulling you over. And there were the Rapid Action Brigade, which is a bit like SWAT team.
Right. Okay.
And so they pull the van over. Yeah, so I'm in the back, so I pull the van door open straight away. Hello! Putting my hands out to shake hands.
As you do.
I jump out. I've got my iPhone out doing selfies with them, and they're all so confused by this point. To give you an idea, from getting on the plane in Singapore to getting back off the plane at Singapore, we saw no Westerners whatsoever anywhere.
Wow.
With the exception of, in one small area down near the Myanmar border, at the best hotel in Bangladesh, all the aid agencies are there. UNHCR, borders, all this for the Rohingya refugee crisis.
Right.
There's about 50k. It's about 50 or 60k from the refugee camp, where there's a million and a half people in this refugee camp.
Wow.
And it was their job to do all the stuff that aid agencies do in those situations.
Yep.
But there was no hotel of any standard worth living in any closer than 60K. So they're doing, a 3 or 4 hour drive to the camp every day and a 3 or 4 hour drive back from the camp every day. To the point that, as I said, there's the first Westerners we saw.
Yep.
So as soon as they see us, everyone's asking, who are you with? Who are you with? Yeah, is there what agency? There are no tourists. We were the first Westerners to go into several locations that had never seen Westerners into these areas.
Wow.
Certainly never big, fat, white men like myself.
Yeah.
So I was stand out. So these police who are very bemused that this guy's jumped out and taken selfies with them. So there's photos of me with them holding the machine guns and smile. And they still no idea. They took photos of the vehicle. They took photos of us. They open up the back. maybe stand next to the luggage and took photos of that.
You were probably the first legitimate work they'd had in months.
Oh, it's so bizarre, you know. And then I don't know, 15, 20 minutes down the road, there's an elephant standing in the middle of the road. He would not move. Yeah, and so that's all completely blocked. And it took 10 minutes to get him. He wouldn't go. It took 10 minutes to get past him. Then about 20 minutes.
Did you get out and speak loudly to the elephant?
No, I should have tried that. I should have tried to self. You might have been camera shy. Then there's a big fire going across the road, so we had to stop for that. Right. So this little detour took us another 5 hours.
Oh, Jesus.
So it ended up being like a 12-hour driving day, which is just exhausting, as you can imagine. So that sort of stuff was pretty tough. So for the next trip, I'm going to change some stuff. We're going to fly to some places that we would normally not, that we would normally probably try and drive to. I've figured a way of saving some time by flying.
Yep.
But then again, the day after I got back, one of the Bangladesh Airlines crashed in Nepal and killed like 80 people or something.
Jeez.
That gives you a bit of confidence to want to fly. But look, yeah, we saw, so literally being some of the first Westerners ever into a lot of these locations was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Being on, and that's the whole reason we went to Bangladesh, to be on the cusp of a burgeoning, opening up place.
Yeah.
Not just going to, yeah, the well-explored areas.
The well-trodden. Yeah.
So there's some massive differences. Bangladesh and India have a lot of similarities, but they have a lot of differences.
Right.
So, yeah, the biggest difference you see is that majority of Indians are Hindu and the majority of Bangladeshis are Muslim.
Right.
So it's a very, very different cultural experience as far as that's concerned.
How strict are they with their Muslim
like any religion, beliefs? There's a fair variety.
Right.
You know, from the extreme full burqa, you know, everything else I'm kind of Muslim.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yep.
Yeah, Muslim by default.
By birth. Like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a little, yeah, it's very typical of of a lot of religions. So of course there's no alcohol in most of the places.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, the thing you're desperate for after a long day is shooting beer. So there's no alcohol, but and the food was fair. You know, India's fabulous food, and Bangladesh, especially the Bangladeshi cuisine itself, is a little more basic.
Okay,
that's probably the best way to describe it.
Is it spicy like Indian food?
There are bits that are spicy.
Yep.
But they're not sort of as curry. They're more spiced than curry.
Yep.
If you know what I mean? Yep. So once again, because it's not an established area, there's not a lot of places that's moderately safe for Westerners to eat.
Sure.
So like when we were in Dhaka for I think 5 or 6 nights. We ate at the same restaurant every night because it was the only one.
Yeah.
Within reasonable distance that was going to be safe enough, and having a fairly limited menu meant you kind of had the same food over and over again.
Right.
Nice as it was, but you get bored of having good stuff. Yeah. So that was a bit challenging. This is some of the locations. So a couple of disappointing things. The chili fest, the chili drying village we went to go to see.
Yeah.
Because they had big floods last year, they had to delay the crops because they delayed the crops that the chilies weren't ripe. Therefore, they weren't drying them, so we didn't
get. I did see the photo of the field, like full of piles of freshly picked chili.
Yeah, but that's not this year's shoot.
Oh.
Yeah, so that was one of the promo images.
Right.
For the tour. But they weren't ripe, so there was no red chilies, so we didn't even bother driving out there to see that.
Oh.
So we ended up driving the longer drive to go and to this massive stone quarry.
Okay.
Yeah. So during our travels, we travelled a fair bit around. At one point, we were right next to the border of India, to the point that I'm picking up Indian cell reception rather than Bangladesh cell reception.
Wow.
Then another part, we're on the border of China in Bangladesh.
Yep.
And then Myanmar and Bangladesh. So we sort of hit three of the major borders around the country. But this massive stone quarry. I mean, just to see the work these people do. They're just digging out boulders out of dirt with hands and picks, from the bottom of the quarry, and then carrying them by hand on their heads up out of the quarry, dumping them into a truck, and then back down and down all day long for hours and hours. But I've got to tell you, the happiest people on the planet.
Really?
They were just so damn friendly, just so damn. There was not one person who gave us a bit of an angry look.
Yeah, right.
not one person who wasn't polite, not one person who wasn't glad to see us.
Yeah, nice.
And I'm talking to people who are living. We went into a tip where children are crawling through rubbish looking for stuff to recycle.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's still five. It's really hard. And where the floor is covered in maggots and the stink and but you know what? The parents, it's a whole family operation. They're all there happy to see us. They chat to us as best as we can with our language barriers and all curious about people meeting people. Yeah, and everywhere we went, it's exactly the same experience.
Wow.
So really, really, really quite remarkable as far as people's concerned.
Yeah.
The other major difference between, say, somewhere like India and Bangladesh is India is overloaded with forts and temples and mosques and just amazing stuff.
Right.
Varanasi. Yeah. It's a 6,000-year-old city. I mean, there's a lot of stuff there. When we went into old Dhaka to see all the old buildings in old Dhaka, I'm looking at this really old building. How old is this? They've got about 120 years. I'm going, well, Australia's got all the stuff older than that, they don't have any of those big monuments and the big, nothing that we came anywhere close to seeing. None of the old ruins of old civilizations and stuff, which is just quite a surprise. I was expecting a little bit of that. But so if someone said to me, is Bangladesh a good place to go and photograph? And I think if you want to go and do the pretty places, the pretty landscapes and cool architecture, absolutely not.
Yeah.
But if you love people and you love seeing a different side of life in all its vagaries and all its hardships and everything else, and really into photojournalistic type of photography where you can just really get in there and just really capture real life. I mean, we're talking about India would have been like 40 or 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, so seeing all the stuff that's been modernized in a lot of places still being done traditionally. It's pretty darn cool.
And
there are Brazilian opportunities to take just remarkable shots. Once again, if you have time, sometimes on a tour it's a little bit hard because you've got to be certain. It takes X amount of time to drive somewhere and X amount of time to drive back. Therefore, you can only be there for X amount of time. If you had unlimited time, you could capture some phenomenal shots.
Yep.
The very first day, for example, in Dhaka, we went into the shipbuilding yards. And here's the thing. You can go anywhere. There's no security. There's no – you just walk into these places. You walk into the stone quarries. Speaking of the stone quarries, we're in this massive, huge, ginormous bloody quarry. It was one of 100 in that area.
Right. What are they doing with all this stone?
Pulling it out of the ground.
And then what are they doing with it?
They carry them up the top of the hill.
Yeah, and then they dump them in a truck. And what does the truck do with it?
Takes it away.
Moves it somewhere else.
But you drive along and there's always hundreds of brick kilns and brick building yards. You just pull over and go in. There's just no one to stop you. And you're welcome everywhere too.
So yeah.
You're driving along, there's all these villagers drying rice. With these amazing procedures they do for drying rice, you just pull over and walk on in and shoot them, and they just, oh, hey! So, I mean, the opportunities as someone who wants to photograph a very rapidly diminishing world, it's an incredible place, to the point that I'm umming and ahhing about putting on a very special, very limited, like I'm talking about 3 or 4 people, trip in June to photograph the big Muslim festivals.
Wow.
And the goal, this is one where all the trains are overcrowded with hundreds of people on the roofs of the trains and everyone's trying to get to this festival. And the goal of the trip really would be not to do anything else but this festival.
Right.
It's going to be how people travel to the festival, what they do when they get there, accommodations, where they live, how they eat, how they bathe, all that kind of stuff. The worship, how they worship, where they worship, the different types of worship, and then the festivities, the stuff they do that's outside the worshiping times, and then how they get home again at the end of the festival.
Yeah, right.
So I'm going to go on and do this photojournalistic tour.
So how long does the festival run?
Well, it's about 4 or 5 days.
Okay. Yep.
So I'm looking at doing a 5 or 6 day trip into the heart. So it's fairly close to Dhaka, which means there's not a lot of driving to get away from to drive 10 hours out of the city.
Yep.
To everyone sort of coming to this area. So there's lots of opportunity.
Yeah, right.
So I'm just working through that at the moment, which is
nice.
Could be interesting.
Yeah.
And then I've got the same trip I've just done here with some tweaks. Will be in February again next year.
Yeah,
so if anyone wants to click on that and capture some remarkable images. So I thought tonight I'll just share a couple of images, maybe share a story or two.
Sure.
And that could be a good now. The problem is my desktop's not showing what the image is. It's just showing, which is really weird. It's only showing the icon. Oh, here we go. So we went to this fish drying village.
Right.
Funnily enough, as the name implies, they dry fish. By the Brazilians, are that just bucket loads and bucket loads of fish drying. So we've got there, and I can't find this damn picture. Bear with it. Oh, here we go. So there's a photo in. There's a photo that's going to come through.
Can you email it rather than Skype it?
Why?
Because it's easier.
Well, can you look at them whilst I'm talking, and then I'll email them as well?
Yeah.
Okay. So coming through now. Ignore if two. No, only one comes through. There we go. Only really small files. Only
okay.
Like 90 yep. files. So we've arrived in this fish village. This place called Cox's Bazaar, which is a bizarre name for the place. Anyway. Right. It's their resort town where all the Bangladeshi, all the well-off Bangladeshis go on their holidays.
Yeah,
the beach. But off to the side, there's this mess and just kilometres of fish drying tables and all sorts of, from tiny, tiny fish to massive fish, all just drying out there in the sun with all the flies and the smell. the smell.
Yeah,
but right. We're walking along, which we've just arrived, and we've come around this corner, and there's this girl collecting mud at the side of the river in this little basket. And the mud's like black, and she's just covered it. You know? And she there's just something about it. It's just a, you know, you look at some people that just have something about them.
Yep.
Yeah. She had this personality. So we got a couple of casual shots of that. She wouldn't hesitate. She wouldn't wait for it. She was very busy doing her mud deliveries. So she's done that and then disappeared.
Yeah.
Not 2 minutes later,
right
at my side appears a girl.
Okay.
And I've just sent the image through. Can you see the second image I've just sent through?
Yeah.
There's this girl in this beautiful yellow scarf and colourful clothes and gorgeous. Same girl.
No way.
She's bombed somewhere. She's showered. She's got all this bloody thick mud off her. She's got all the mud out of her hair. Her hair's perfect.
Wow.
What the hell? My kids take 2 hours to get ready. This kid's done in about a minute and a half. And there she hung around with us for about 2 hours.
Wow.
And she was the most gorgeous. I mean, just in personality, in person. Gorgeous kid possible.
Yeah.
And again, there was just something about it. When I pulled my camera to my eye to look at her to take the photograph, it was just like there was just something about it. She just had a presence, which was just astounding.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's just little experiences like that. You know, you're hounded by kids because, once again, you're a novelty. So sometimes it's kind of hard to shoot.
Yeah.
So to give the customers the chance of being able to take photographs, I had to act a bigger dick than I normally do.
Yeah. Right.
I know it's hard to believe. So I've kind of Pied Piper tried to pull the kids away from the group so they could take some damn photos without 40 kids jumping in front of the camera every second.
Yeah, right.
And so I'm doing all sorts of dancing, I'm singing, doing magic tricks, everything in my repertoire to get these kids away from the cameras. But we'll be followed by kids like this all the way along, which is really cool, you know. And so there's another example coming through.
Yeah.
In we went to this village where they do a tie dye.
Okay.
And tie clothes and everything else. And very colourful place because they're hanging up all these amazing coloured garments everywhere.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Again, there's the kids and they're running around, they're chasing us and they're just having fun. So you say, okay, go stand over there and now run at us, you know. And then we take this photograph. They're just pissing themselves laughing. So, I mean, you get this opportunity to capture life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But here's the trick for the customers. You it's really hard as a tour leader, is to manage people's expectations
right.
about what's possible. You're not going to get every photograph.
Yeah,
it's possible to get every photograph. No one gets every photograph, and even something like this where we can set up.
Yeah,
you might get a good one because the kids will do it 3 or 4 times and they'll be bored.
Yeah,
you've got three or four chances to get it right. And in this particular case, there's four kids.
Yeah.
Which means you all four of them to be looking interesting.
Yeah.
It's not good if you get two looking great and two looking stupid.
Yeah.
Or three looking great and one looking out of place or being blocked by something. So to, the chances of it coming together is extremely difficult. I'm pretty pleased with the shot. This shot
That's a great quite. Shot. It's awesome.
There's things I'd want to improve, like the kid on the left-hand side, she's got this really kind of pulling a chin back in, looks a bit weird.
Yeah.
But the two on the right-hand side make up for that because they're the focus.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you've got this. So and then you look at, well, as everything I say in the photographs, when I talk about critiquing everyone's photos, there's very little in this photograph other than the story.
Yeah.
There's the kids, there's the clothing, and there's lines of the shadows, of the fact, and that's it.
Yep.
You know, managing your lens so you're not seeing too much or not seeing too little is a really paramount way of getting the shot. You know, so as with all the photographs you've seen, the ones I've sent through so far, there's very little in these images other than the story I'm trying to convey.
Yeah.
I think this is a really important tact when you're shooting. You know, don't shoot. See, here's another example. We went on the railway lines in Dhaka, where thousands of people, tens of thousands of people live.
Okay.
And they live their whole existence on this track.
Right.
So it's a really hard place to shoot. Once again, because A, you've got 50 kids following you everywhere.
Yeah.
But there's so much going on. And this is a constant problem with shooting in locations like India and Bangladesh, anywhere in Asia where it's a bit crazy, it's hard to simplify the stories.
Yep.
Yeah. You have too much going on, it's too much going on for people to grasp the photo. So I only took about six or seven photographs on this train line. And Yusuf, the guy, comes and goes, "What's wrong, Glenn? You're not taking photos." I said, "Well, I am keeping these kids away, but B, I'm waiting for the right moment, you know." So there's a kid here who's flying his kite.
Yeah.
A little handmade kite, a bit of paper, a bit of string on the railway lines. But for that one moment, he didn't have five other kids around him. He didn't have – and he just stopped and looked at me. And then, bang, that's the shot.
Yeah.
You've got 0.3 of a second to take it, and then he's run off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're going to miss most of the times you won't get the shot.
Yep.
Because you're not going to be prepared in time. You're not going to have the right lens on. You're not going to have the right settings on your camera. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
The thing I'm trying to get more people to understand, if they're trying to capture interesting or good or great travel photos, is not to expect to get very many.
Right. Yep.
If you come away from a trip with half a dozen really good images, you've probably done really well.
Yep.
Versus wanting 50 great shots a day. Probably going to lead to nothing but disappointment for yourself and stress and then you can start beating yourself up because you're not getting great photos and all this sort of stuff. And I don't know if I've got any great photos on this trip.
Right.
I've got lots of the nice ones. I really like the shot I just sent through to you. So we went into this this village where they break bricks with their bare hands or with a hammer.
Right.
So they basically hold a brick between their feet and smash it into pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all these bricks have been made in the kiln, so obviously not quite up to standard or whatever, and they crush them all down, but using these bricks. And so there's a photo here of a girl in front of a pile of all these bricks that have been broken down.
Yeah.
This kid's going to school.
Right.
And this kid is a massive exception, you know. She's got her little blackboard with a pen and a bit of paper and a pencil.
Yep.
And yeah, this kid was so damn proud because she's somehow, I don't know how she's managed, but somehow managed to get out of this
rut,
this life. Because 10 feet to the right of her is a 5-year-old girl sitting there smashing rocks and bricks with a hammer.
Yeah, right.
Probably the rest of her life.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's 5, and that's her job from 8 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon every single day.
Yes. You know?
Exactly. And there's this kid. Yeah, she's out there, and she's you've got a chance, there's some hope, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
And this is another shot just coming through now from the same village where all these women, these are all women breaking bricks. But look at the lady who's covering herself up.
Yeah.
The cheekiness in the eyes. Laughter. We're having a moment where we're laughing at each other.
Yeah.
And laughing at the situation we've probably both find ourselves in. Yeah. And so, yeah, people often say, "Oh, you know, you go and photograph poor people." No, we go and photograph people.
Yeah.
And we go and photograph people that are different from us. And what's really important when we photograph these people is that we have a human connection.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have that little, even if it's only just for a minute, we have a little bit of time where we can share a bit of each other. Yeah. And that might be just a smile. It might be just in a gesture, you know, a little bit of cheekiness like that. And to me, it's a wonderful experience. And it's not about photographing people who don't have much. It's about photographing the world that we live in.
Yeah.
And people that we share that with, and the very big differences that exist, but at the same time being human the whole time, you know. I was sending another photo through. So we went to this little river where these guys are carrying bucket loads of wet sand from a boat up this hillside onto the top of the hill and dumping it out where people sort the sand out. You know? So these cane baskets probably weigh 30 or 40 kilos because it's wet sand.
Yeah, right.
And they're doing one every minute and a half.
Wow.
From 8 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon. And I love this shot. This is possibly my favourite shot from the trip.
Right.
It's just this intensity in this guy's face.
Yeah.
This look right down the barrel. And of all the shots I took, this is the photograph that could be mistaken as having the most animosity.
Yeah, yep.
Of having the most confrontation, looking, yeah.
Yep.
There's a certain aggression. But, you know, I've got about 10 or 15 other shots of this guy, maybe 10 shots, right, where he's laughing and pissing himself laughing. Yeah, where we're giggling, just being stupid. It was just this one moment. He just stopped. Maybe he took the facade down for a second and just showed a bit of him. And it was wonderful, yeah, to be able to capture that one moment. Yep. So out of all those shots, I remember this guy as a funny, laughing guy.
Right.
That's my experience of this person and what I remember. Yeah. But
it's not what the rest of the world's going to see in that image.
Yeah. And to me, this from my perception of what I imagine his life is like, this reflects that.
Yep.
That hardship. But the reality is he's a happy guy. Yeah, I'm not saying he's got an easy life. It's a horribly hard life.
Yeah.
But there's still that amazing sense of fun and laughter and enjoyment and sharing and everything else. It's not that business. And you go to a lot of countries these days, and they don't want these people. They hate tourists. Yeah. They just don't want to see another tourist ever again, you know. But, yeah, because there's so few tourists go here. And everyone's saying, please tell more people about us.
Really?
Bring more tourists.
Wow.
Yeah, come and see it. Bring more people. Come back again.
Yeah.
And that's really cool, you know. What else? The first day, so we went to the shipbuilding yards. As I said, you can go anywhere you want.
Yeah.
But what's amazing is the way they build ships. I'm talking about huge, huge ships, like, you know, not container size, but, you know, ones that will go out in the ocean and, yeah, so say a half size of container ship. But they build it by sticking a bunch of bamboo poles in the ground that's about the shape of where the ship's going to be. Then they put a piece of metal around the outside of it, okay? Yeah. That's the shape of the boat.
Yeah.
Then they get a whole bunch of guys, and they push, and these bamboo poles are tall. They're probably 30, 40 feet tall.
Right.
Yeah. Then they get all these guys, and they push this bit of metal up the bamboo poles, getting on each other's shoulders and slowly work this thing up. And then they start attaching metal sheeting to this bit of metal and build the ship downwards from this. And once they've got the shell, then they go inside and start putting all the internal structure and everything else and build these ships in the most incredible way, you know?
Wow.
And just to watch it and to be in there and this. We saw, I had to take a photo, I saw a guy with a hard hat on.
Right.
There's one guy. He's got the one in the country, you know? Yeah. And the conditions they work in are astounding, and the hardships. But they're all even when they're lifting stuff. You know, so I had to be tick that I am. I ran and helped push up the poles, the sheeting up the poles because I'm taller than them. I could reach a bit further. So I jumped into it. But as they're doing that, they're singing. Yeah, you know? It's almost like the old chain gang singing songs.
Yeah, right.
Stuff that puts up, and the atmosphere is fabulous. You know? I've got to spend days upon days shooting there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we had a few hours. But there's one little laneway in the shipbuilding yard where they make propellers.
Okay.
And, oh, God, the way they do it is astounding. They've got these little holes in the ground, which are basically furnaces, where they're pouring oil, like black oil, into these open fires.
Yeah.
So you can imagine the smoke that's billowing out to get the heat up. And then they're dropping any bits of scrap metal they can find, you know, bits of brass and stuff like that, like nuts and bolts and things, and melting them down and then pouring them into molds and making propellers for these ships that they're building.
Wow.
And every 10 feet was a National Geo potential prize winner. but not enough time to do it justice.
Yeah.
So the shot I sent through there, these are two of the ship painters,
right?
And they're painted. All the ships are painted orange for some reason.
Right.
This Bangladesh color. So this guy's against a green wall with their orange paintbrush, and one's got an orange rag. So he's just. But what amazed me, I've got the photos. This one guy is up on a ship.
Yeah.
It's a huge thing, and he's painting it with a roller that's about 2.5 inches wide.
Yeah. Well, he's got his whole life to finish it. So.
it's just unbelievable. Yeah, and you have to laugh. You know, and they're looking at you and they're laughing because they think it's funny too. And yeah, it's just, and everywhere you look, it's just this amazing, incredible opportunities. And there's another shot I've been sent through towards the end of the trip down to this place called Cox's Bazaar again. As you go further and further down the coastline, and the road down the coastline has only been open 7 months. There's never been a road there before other than the track.
Right.
So, once again, not many Westerners ever been down there.
When you say a road, we're still talking like a dirt road?
A bitumen road.
Oh, bitumen road.
Yes, it's probably been a dirt track for who knows how long.
They're coming up in the world.
This is a good one. but there's absolutely no one on the road on this road. Yeah, there's an occasional vehicle, but almost nothing. The best road the whole trip, and there's no one on it.
Yeah.
The further you go down this road, the more colourful the boats get.
Right.
Yeah. So we call them moon boats, but they're kind of like a crescent moon.
Crescent shaped. Yep.
Yeah, and they go from being nothing but pitch black to pitch black with one line of colour, and then as you get out more, and so the place we stopped in, as you can see in this photograph, just had the most colourful boats imaginable. Yeah, these fishing boats. And just how to get it, we got there just sort of bringing them all back in from the sea and everything else, and unloading all the fish. And they're inviting us onto the boats to eat with them. And it's just the local politician from the area came down and asked to take photos so he could share that we'd come to see the area and everything else. And it was just, never felt so welcome.
Yeah.
And look, I guess I've been to a lot of places where you do feel very welcome. Yeah. But these guys were a step above. They were just the most astoundingly wonderful people.
Well, I guess, as you said, you know, you were there for however many days you were there and barely saw another Westerner and certainly saw no other tourists.
Not a single Westerner. Not a single one.
You know, other than the people in the agencies. But
you drive around the entire city, the major city in the country, for days and don't see a single Westerner.
Wow.
Not in the hotels, not in anywhere. You know,
it's phenomenal.
It is. It really is quite astounding. You know, you expect to see some.
Yeah.
You know, but not a skerrick. Now the hardest part of the trip for me was, I'd like to control lighting where possible.
Yeah.
I'd like to craft some shots. Now all these locations were so huge and so dynamic. There's so much stuff going on, and they're working so damn hard, you really can't stop them for more than a second or two. So there isn't really an opportunity to not stage, but craft a couple of shots. Stage doesn't sound right to me. It sounds fake. But, I mean, craft a couple of shots. Like, oh, get this great-looking character and say, oh, could you stand over here where the light's a bit better? That kind of stuff.
Yep.
Not a lot of chance to do that. So there was only two for the whole trip.
Right.
That I managed to get people to, well, one woman was already in good light, but she was working in, her job was to sort aluminium offcuts.
Right.
And sort them out, I don't know, to size or who knows, but she's basically filling these massive bags with tiny shavings of sharp bits of aluminium cutoffs.
Right.
Into this massive sack. And so her face is covered in aluminium dust, her hands are covered in aluminium dust, and she's in this tiny little 10-foot by 10-foot room. Off an alleyway,
right.
And the light in there was fabulous, and she had an incredibly strong and characterful face. So I got this is the only time in the entire trip I got a bit aggro, not angry, but I was displeased with the tour operator, the tour guides.
Oh, okay.
Now my tour guide, phenomenal photographer. I don't think it's probably a bit of a lie. I don't know if he knows that much about photography.
Right,
because he shoots everything at f/8, nothing else. So I don't think he's into the nuance of photography per se.
Right,
but he can compose really well.
Right,
and he has a great sense of timing, and is in incredible places all the time. So the potential to get good shots is there.
Yep.
Yeah. But I'm not saying he's a master skilled craftsman per se, but a very good, very, very good photographer. So we're walking this laneway of this aluminium area, and I've seen this woman, and I'm saying, quick, we've got to shoot this woman. Everyone stay here. And it's so tiny. Only I could go in, I could set it up and then get someone else to come and shoot, get one at a time sort of thing.
You know? Right.
So I've got in, I've got it all set up through the interpreter where I needed to stand and everything else. I've taken the shot, got one other customer in, she's got the shot, looked outside, everyone's disappeared.
Oh, what?
Like the best lighting opportunity of the trip. This is like 8 days into the trip or 9 days into the trip. The best potential shot of the entire trip. Everyone's gone. They've taken them up to some other place that was crap. It's like, oh! So I bolted up there and I'm, don't you take my customers away from me, but I'm set to. So I dragged them all back and then she couldn't stay anymore. Oh. Only two of us got it. But I love the shot. I mean, it's the top one. It's pretty much all black because the whole building was black. But just this little light, this intensity in her face was just fabulous.
Yeah.
And then the last control shot was, he was actually just sitting there in this cafe with a big orange beard and a big blue wall behind him. Yeah. You can't not shoot that, you know?
Yeah.
And but once again, beautiful light because it was being squeezed through openings of a window and falling off into darkness and the rest of the shot. So you can actually set up another shot. But once again, both of these shots, under 2 minutes maybe to do it. Yeah. Not even that, under a minute.
Yeah.
Under a minute.
Yeah.
To do each one. So it really prevails once again the need, if your penchant is to want to go out and do this sort of stuff, of just how you need to ramp up your skills.
Yeah.
Yeah. How you have to be instantaneous in almost everything you do. And then be prepared to not get many good shots. Yeah. Even with that skill.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a really hard place to shoot, but the more time you spend, I'm sure the more incredible the photos would be. The opportunities are astounding, as I said, to shoot things. So I'm really, really, really interested about this this June trip. So here's the thing. Towards the end of the trip, I got pretty sick. I got sick about two-thirds of the way through with fever and migraines. And so I wasn't feeling my best the last couple of days and a bit low energy. And I could sense, because I wasn't up, the mood of the group wasn't great. Yeah, well, this is how I was feeling. You know? Yeah. And I'm feeling more and more tension in the group. And there's one lady, and I'm sure, I hope she has never listened to the podcast, but she wouldn't stay with the group.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she'd go off on her own a bit, but then come back and complain she'd got nothing but shit job. and it was, and look, everyone's different personality types. I understand that and everything else. But it was starting to get to me. I was getting a little bit stressed.
Yeah.
You know? And then we were all flying back to Singapore, and you know, one person was going off to Perth, one was staying in Singapore, one stayed back in Bangladesh for another day, and a couple of us were going back to Melbourne. But we all got off the plane in Singapore. I bolted in the toilet, came out, and the woman who'd been staying away had walked off night and said goodbye.
Oh, what?
And I'm just like, oh my God, she's had the worst trip of her life. Oh, I'm just feeling. Not suicidal, but I was pretty freaking depressed.
Yeah,
I was
right.
So down on myself, and I was just, I was destroyed. I was gutted. And I got home, and I'm just, yeah, for 2 or 3 days, I'm just morose. You know?
Yeah.
That's just terrible. It's all gone haywire. I can't believe she's had such a terrible time. She didn't want to say even say goodbye and everything else. And then I get this email from a couple of days ago. Oh, Clint, just thank you so much for the trip. I had a great time. Her computer died on the trip, so she hasn't looked at any images. I'm still waiting for my computer to come back, so I've posted images yet. I see you mentioning possibly going back in June. Can you let me know the details? So I just must have misread that, or I was sick, or just the whole vibe and everything else, and which is great because she's a lovely lady. So, I mean, I'd love to have her back, but I just felt so, that I'd done such a bad job with her. and she's keen to come back in a couple of months.
Wow.
So that's pretty cool. So if anyone's out there wanting to come in June, so I'm only going to take 3-4 people. Literally, whilst we're talking, the costings have just come through. So I'm going to go through and look at all the what's involved and what the itinerary is going to look like. And I'll have that sorted in the next few days, hopefully.
Yeah.
And then we'll do this little guerrilla trip in there and just really focus on. Yeah, I reckon you could put together a book of this festival,
right?
You know, of the, just the journey. If you, you know, you could tell a great story over because you're concentrating your intent on one set of images, on one story, on a cohesive set of images, rather than just going to random places and taking lots of photos, which show off a country quite well, but they're quite disparate. You know, fishing villages, stones, you know, garbage tips, brick builders, people walking the street. Yeah, it's quite a disparate range of images. Mm. Where this is all people traveling to, people praying. Yeah, it's all about the one thing. I reckon we could make a pretty cool exhibition or a pretty cool book, I would imagine.
Yeah, right.
So, if anyone's interested in that. And other than that, as I'm doing another, and possibly me and Malcolm may do Bangladesh next February together. I haven't asked him yet or talked to him about it, but it's a possibility. So that's it. So Bangladesh, phenomenal place. And I'm not going to say, I can easily imagine in 10 years it'll all be gone. It'll be just so completely different. If it even takes 10 years, it could be 5 years.
Yeah.
You get a full window to get in and capture something pretty special before it's overrun. And so this beach, this road I was telling you about that's only 7 months old, you're driving along these fishing villages and these little rice paddies and all this sort of stuff. It's the best road. Every bit of that land's been bought by hotel resorts.
What?
It's been bought for a long time. So they've bought this land cheap years ago with the anticipation that at some point it's going to explode, and they've already got it all, and it cost them nothing because of the way they bought it.
Wow.
So it's still all being lived on, and they're allowing the people to just keep their normal lives going. But at some stage, you can see this place explode.
Yeah, right.
A lot of potential. So that's it. That was Bangladesh. I just opened my India tour for November this year, just opened today. So if you want to come and see all the great temples and all the great forts and all the great Tajs and Varanasi, with all the cool stuff and the people, come on that. And we're going to push car camel fare again.
Right.
So that's I'm really I love India. I mean, I'd live there. I reckon it's a great place to shoot. So if anyone's interested in that, come along. And for any American listeners, it's a really good chance. I'll be there in late October, doing some workshops in Pennsylvania, but also doing some appearances at the Photo Plus show in New York, which runs I think it's October 24 to 27. So I'll be over there doing some stuff. So if you go to Photo Plus, which is about the biggest photo show left in America, about 20,000 plus attendees, a lot of working photographers going along.
Yep.
And I'll be doing a couple of workshops and doing some stuff and appearances for some of my sponsors, more than likely. So keep an eye out for that.
Cool.
That's of interest. That's enough advertising for one show, isn't it?
Nice. Now, I'm going to leave all the other stories that we've collected over the last few weeks.
That way, we don't have to do any work next week.
Well, yeah, well, there's that. But I did want to ask you, because hopefully you're across this story.
I'm completely across.
What the hell happened to the AIPP while you were gone?
Well, see, I leave, everything falls over. you know what it's like. Sometimes it's the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's been... Yeah, it's discontent about this little thing and a bit of discontent about that little, and some quarters over there don't like this bit going on, and some people don't like the AIPP used to be a very state-based organisation. So the states had a lot of say in the way things were done for their own state, which makes sense.
Okay.
But it got to be quite a large organisation, and so it was centralised in a national office.
Right.
And then the national office, it kind of made sense because they had full-time staff rather than volunteers, that they do a lot of the organising, a lot of the planning for staff. So some of that sort of autonomy kind of became centralised, which doesn't always please everybody.
Right.
As you can imagine. And then there's issues here and issues, and then the bit of dwindling finances because the world of photography is changing and all this sort of stuff. And so they tried opening up to emerging members and everything else, and that put a few people's backs up because all of a sudden people with less talent, as far as they were concerned, are now members, even though it's only an emerging member. Yeah, they're diluting the pool or whatever they are. So there's all sorts of stuff going on, and then. For the awards ceremony stuff, they decided to put in some new blood and kick out the old blood. And that sort of pissed off an awful bunch of people who thought it was disrespect. And it just kind of snowballed. There's infighting going on, people disagreeing with each other. So then the board basically just quit.
Right.
And they closed down the national office, and it's still it's not gone. It's just going to rejig into a new version of itself, probably back to more state based, because there's no national office anymore. They all got the sack.
Right.
There'll be a national committee, but state based more operations. So it's not gone. It's just going to be a new organisation.
Right.
Yeah, so AIPP, for those who don't know, Australian Institute of Professional Photoshoppers. I mean, sorry, Professional Photographers.
Yeah.
and there's a couple other people trying to start up their own organisations that are less based around competition and awards and that sort of stuff. They say it's all a bit elitist,
right,
and stuff. So it's just it's the same with any organisation that, A, is run by members.
Yep.
Yeah, that's always going to have everyone with a million different opinions.
Yep.
And in a massively changing industry.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough to keep everybody happy all the time. So in all honesty, I've seen some stuff, but I haven't been all over every bit of detail about who's complaining about what and
right,
who's been giving threats to who about what and why. But I've seen enough to inklings, and I know enough about organisations to kind of get a feel for stuff.
Yeah.
So. Did I waffle it on so long? We're going to do something else next week. I'll take anything for next week.
Yeah, cool.
It's a good idea, isn't it? Well, that means we don't do no next week.
That's right.
Yeah, so we'll post those images up that I've been talking about.
Yep, I've grabbed them all off Skype.
That'd be have to be high res. Just
they're medium res. They're good enough.
Yeah, they're good enough to get an idea. I mean, all I'm doing is talking about thoughts, and this is just I just literally grabbed a random sample of images and thought with no real, let's talk about these, whatever, however many it was. I just grabbed some as we were talking off Facebook. So, there's a bunch more.
Did you download those from Facebook?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Why?
Oh, because Facebook just recompresses everything and makes it look even worse than it was before.
Then people don't like the images. I complain Facebook. I'm like that photography. No, I'm not on the computer. It's got all my photos on anyway. So
right,
that's why I had to grab my Facebook. So I'm on a different computer.
Okay, all right, mate. Well, good to have you back.
Good to be back, and
we'll chat with you next week.
You will. Take care, everybody.
See ya.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZincPodcast.com.